Hey, Wham Bam Powers. Producer Lindsay here. Cameron, Rhea, and Ricky took a break from recording this week to cook some brats and hang out poolside, so we thought we'd delve into the vault and share some early, unreleased stuff with you. I'm talking listener requests. So here are the reviews of Highlander and Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Both of these are available now on Netflix Watch Instant. Enjoy.
Today's movie, it is the 1986 film Highlander. Oof. Russell Mulcahy directed, known for almost nothing else.
Oh, good old Russell Mulcahy.
He did like a Resident Evil most recently.
He did a bunch of Highlanders.
He did Highlander 2, Too Legit to Highland.
Yeah, he did.
And I want to start out at the top, and we've all got a lot to say. We watched this movie last night, all of us separately, and haven't spoken a word about it to each other. But I want to start with a quick summary. So Highlander is a film about, Rhea, what would you say this movie is about?
I knew that it was about an immortal guy going into it.
He is immortal.
But watching the first 20 minutes or so, if I hadn't known that, wouldn't have known that, probably. Yeah. It's about a Scottish guy.
Right, he's from the Highlands.
He's from the Highlands, hence
Scotland,
the Highlander.
He's
played by a French man who's struggling a lot do a Scottish accent.
With an undisguised Scottish accent, I'd even say. And the way they take care of that, because he's immortal, he's lived for, like, a bunch of lives.
So it's muddled.
And so he's even asked in the film, like, you got a weird accent. And he goes, hey, I've lived a lot of places.
Yeah.
Which is a great way of taking care of that. I want to thank the director exactly to us. Ricky, what... So it's an immortal guy. He's also a warrior.
He is a warrior. And, can we talk about the first 20 minutes of this movie?
Sure, absolutely.
I was on board. I've never seen the movie before, and I was in. It starts off, he's at Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
Watching from Badtown, USA, the fabulous Freebirds wrestling in the ring. Queen is playing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm in.
Yes,
this is great.
Queen is playing. He's at Madison Square Garden. He's wearing a McGruff the Crime Dog trench coat.
He's got the trench
Everybody
coat.
Else is chilling out in a loose baggy cutoff sleeves tee.
Yes, yeah.
Then he goes to the basement of Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And
he has a fight with
swords. I want to add that.
Yeah,
ornate.
Exactly.
Swords, which I blinked and did not see where those swords came from. So all of a sudden, they've got swords.
Yeah, I'm still in at this point. I'm still like, oh, this is going to be solid. Here we go. We're going to get some sword fighting. They start sword fighting, and they have that. Oh, I really liked when their swords would hit. It would do this cool effect where, like, this lightning would hit. And it was like you could tell, I was like, ooh, that's a cool 80s special effect. I think the budget ran out for that like 7 swipes in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because then it stops.
That's
it just doesn't happen anymore. And I was like, that's weird.
No, it's like, it's that lightning, like the Emperor Palpatine. Like, it's the lightning from
absolutely.
Star Wars.
Speaking absolutely.
Of, it's that Star Wars, like, it's that lightning. Pow, 3 times. That's the only time that they're able to use that lightning.
Yes.
They are sword fighting. Now, here's what I want to get to about this portion of the movie. They are sword fighting. Guy gets his head lobbed off. The NYPD arrive to investigate the scene. Now, guys, here's my question to both of you. They find a sword and seem relatively unfazed by the fact that a man has been beheaded with a sword in Manhattan.
Oh, of course.
Here's my follow-up.
Of course.
Do you think that's actually unbelievable? Because at first I was like, these dudes are not even impressed. But then I also remembered, I've been to Manhattan.
Yeah. This is 1980s. This is not what we're talking about
here. It's exactly.
Absolutely.
It's the 80s.
Like, swords,
absolutely.
For sure. I feel like I would absolutely see somebody in Times Square with a samurai sword, and then people be posing for pictures with that murderer. Like, nobody would give a shit.
There was actually a background line which was, oh, yep, there's the head.
Yeah.
Of like, just, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
They did not care.
It's gritty New York. They're unsurprised. They've never, hey, it's a sword. Who cares? Unfazed.
And up until this point, we've only been seeing the, like, Scottish timeline backstory in like 10-second flashback increments,
which is so
disconcerting as a viewer to be like, wait, what is this? It feels like a music video or like a weird...
I was thinking, oh, wait, is he jumping back in time right now? Is he actually there? Nope, he's back in the parking lot. We're in the parking lot
so
again.
So the Highlander, who's played by Christopher Lambert, he is in both these Scottish flashback scenes, and also he's in Manhattan. So you see him twice. And when he's in the Scotland flashback scenes, he's got this crazy long... First of all, that guy also... Real big forehead on the man.
Huge forehead.
I mean,
yeah.
And can I add that he looks exactly like Tom Jane.
Oh, you think Tom Jane?
The Punisher, Tom Jane.
Oh, really?
They are like spit... Like, I thought...
Actually, you know what? That's right.
I was telling myself, maybe this is just Tom Jane.
You know, so I actually thought he looked like a Kids in the Hall character.
Okay.
Or
sure.
Or maybe Caveman Lawyer from Saturday Night Live.
Ooh, I like Caveman Lawyer.
He's got like a prominent brow in a way that you wouldn't expect him to make it in Hollywood. But I will also add that a couple years after this, because I did some research on, like, what's going on with Christopher Lambert? So he was French. He also, a couple years after this, was married to Diane Lane.
Whoa,
is
like
that right?
For years and years.
Whoa,
and
whoa.
If you haven't seen a picture of the dude... This dude, Christopher Lambert, you should look that up just to try and imagine he and Diane Lane going anywhere together and having that make any sense.
Good for you, Christopher. Diane Lane. Are we disrespecting him? Is it Christopher Lambert or is it Christopher Lambert?
Oh, you're right. It could be
Lambert.
It could be. Oh, you're right. Shoot. I think you're totally right.
Who knows where that man is from with that accent?
Well, then
I
in that case, it should be Christophe.
Exactly.
I would also say, so we find out that this is an immortal man. There are several immortal beings, and they all have to fight each other. The only way that they can die, which also I would add that anytime you say the sentence, the only way that they can die, right after saying immortal person, I think maybe we're not actually talking about immortality, which is one of my biggest problems with the movie. All you have to do is cut their heads off and they're dead.
Yeah.
So like they can live through anything else,
and
but
then
not
I think
a head cut
that
off.
That person actually gains the... power of that one that they just killed.
There does seem to be some power transfer. So I feel like I want to move away from summary and I want to just talk more about like a long view of the movie.
Sure.
And so
sure.
here are some other things to talk about in the movie. Of course there's a training montage as all good warrior movies have.
Absolutely.
And the training montage is between Christopher Lambert and one Sean Connery.
Oh.
Now also Sean Connery, this movie is 1986. Sean Connery is wearing like a dandy's Spanish conquistador.
Because he's a Spaniard. He's a Scottish Spaniard.
He looks like he could be a member in Prince's Revolution.
He does.
Exactly. When he showed up.
He absolutely looks like he's playing bass.
Absolutely.
He looks like he is playing bass for Prince. But here's the other thing I want to just put in context for you guys, and I don't know if you realize this. So he played James Bond for the last time in 1982.
Oh,
this
wow.
movie... in 1984, so it had to have been shot, you know, and again, if it's released in 82, but this is within 5 years that he is playing James Bond, sexiest international super spy and sexually ambiguous Spaniard with a soul patch.
Yeah,
like his career dropped off in a steep way. It is that James Bond car went right over that cliff.
The 80s were not kind to Sean Connery.
No, they
one
were
bit.
Not. And Rhea, you would know this. When would he have been doing
1989.
Indiana Jones? In 1989. So then we're talking about like a 13-year period when he maybe did not redeem himself.
Yeah, not at all.
He got the Oscar for the Untouchables.
Oh, 89.
That was the only. Yeah,
that's
but
88,
I mean,
right?
I think 88, 89?
So right around the same time.
Okay, so 88. So, yeah. Not 13 years, 3 years. I thought you said 90. But anyway, so my point is, this movie is dropped in the middle of those movies.
Yeah, that's insane to me.
He is in a bit supporting role.
Yeah.
He is riding a horse, though. Nice to see that he has the skills to ride a horse. I didn't know that about him.
Lots of feathers.
And then also, we were talking about, so Highlander was also a TV show in like that 90s boom of people with swords on bad sets.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah,
like
terrible.
Like a Xena, Hercules.
Absolutely.
And do you remember also that Xena, Hercules were, they did crossover.
They did crossover.
Oh,
yeah, they did. Yes, they did. I
like
remember
that. Like a Flintstones meet the Jetsons, sort of like a, here's my best friend, Cena. Like, she's always visiting.
She just happened to be on the stage next door.
He's always visiting. And it does feel like that poor Highlander, I don't think he got any of that love. I don't think there was ever a Xena.
No, he didn't.
Highlander.
No.
Hercules crossover. No. But
I remember the Highlander TV show, and I would always watch it. Exactly, because I'd never seen the movie. I've never seen a Highlander movie, and now I know why. Because I would always watch it, like, what the hell is this?
What is going on ever?
And it's, like, just terrible budget.
Yeah.
He's got a sword. What's up with his ponytail?
I don't know.
Get to the next generation. Star Trek The Next Generation would always be on after. Let's get to Next Generation. Whoever's at controlling UPN 50,
sure,
push the forward button to the next show.
I understand the exact moment you're talking about. This moment is like, Muppet Babies is on a Saturday morning. Oh, classic. So glad it's on. Then afterwards, Pee-wee's Playhouse, into it, not as into it, bam, Soul Train. Fuck! This day, like, now I gotta go outside, because this day is off the rails. As a child, had no ability to appreciate Soul Train. It really felt like, well, the entire week was over. Like, Christmas has come, and we've opened our presents, and now,
done. Back to school.
It's just 365 more days until Christmas,
Cameron,
again.
I love that peaks of your day when you were a child were Muppet Babies and Soul Train.
Yes.
You live. That's how you live your youth, girl.
I want to add another thing about, so just to put this in a greater context for you guys. So Queen, Ricky, you were saying earlier that Queen did the soundtrack.
Yes.
Did the soundtrack for this movie. And probably, I think, the song that stops the whole movie is Who Wants to Live Forever?
Yeah.
Is the refrain. Who wants to live forever? Actually, which is happening during so the Highlander comes out to a woman by saying, like, I'm an immortal being, I'm a Highlander, and then she looks at him, hey, no problem. We're just people. And then they have a love session. Queen is playing over top, Who Wants to Live Forever? I would add, so we're watching this cheesy lovemaking song, but this movie was released in 86. Now, I looked this up to see if there was an actual timeline. It has never been confirmed when Freddie Mercury figured out he was HIV positive. But it is sometime between...
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
It is sometime between 85 and 87. So it is possible. And this is... He is writing this song at the height of the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
As a gay man who's fucked everybody, and he is writing this song, Who Wants to Live Forever? Maybe he already knows he's HIV positive. He dies in 91. And this movie, is playing
that.
This song in this cheesy, like, with swords over top it, just like, this is a funny song about an immortal guy. No, that is a song about a dude staring down the face of the AIDS crisis going like, I think I probably have it. I'm not sure. Anyway, who wants to live forever? Bring on the coke and boys.
That makes sense, because later he's then just like, New York! Like singing that New York cover that they do in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, there is.
He just doesn't give a shit by then. I didn't even think about that context.
Were you ever watching it when a Queen song would come on? And I was watching it, and I was always hoping that whoever was in the scene while the Queen song was playing, I always wish they could hear the Queen song, like, just like their swords clash, and they, like, look
you
up,
hope
like,
there's
oh,
a,
shit.
You hope there's a boombox.
Yeah,
you hope there's a
boombox. Right next to it, absolutely. Right.
Well, like, when they do musicals, and then they'll have, like, you have to have, like, even, you have to have the music playing so you can sing.
Right, right.
You're hoping that, they didn't betray themselves at all by ever, like, lip reading while they were sword fighting, but that would have been great, just mouthing, who want to live forever. She's like, can you please kiss me? This is very unromantic.
Such a good song.
I don't know what you're
this
singing
is my jam.
To.
Did we all like this movie or not like this movie? Because I thought this was... Here, I started to write notes, and then when it got to Sean Connery saying... Sean Connery's name in this movie is Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez.
Yeah.
Sean Connery is playing a man with no accent, with a Sean Connery accent.
Yeah.
At one point, I was like, they're just giving him more Spanish names to be more of like a, yeah, sure, he's Latino. Antonio, Tito.
Wait, you know.
It's just like, what is happening right now?
Can I add this? there's a throwaway line. I don't know if either of you caught it, where he goes, "Well, actually, I'm Egyptian." Yeah. He actually says
he does.
I totally
remember that. Yeah.
But he's supposed to be. This is so that scene where he says, "I'm Egyptian," it takes place in the 1500s. So ostensibly, he was Egyptian from before the 1500s. When, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were black. Like, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure before the 1500s, they had at least some sort of glow, like a rosy hue.
He did have eyeliner on.
Yeah, he did
so
have
I
eyeliner.
Guess he was pretty Egyptian.
Yeah, he learned from Cleopatra herself.
Yeah, exactly.
I was watching the movie last night with a friend of ours, a Chicago comedian Dan Telfer. And every time, like, he's the one who pointed out the Egyptian line.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, wait, yeah. Now where's this dude from? And then later on in the movie, somebody brings something up about his past. I think he was just throwing out, like, if you could think of a country, he would throw it out.
Right.
Somebody mentioned something about it, like a past wife or a past love. And he's like, well, I married into a Japanese family.
Yes.
I was like, what are you talking about? Where are you from?
Exactly.
Oh.
Well, I would add to that there are some, so those are some wild moments. There are also some funny, it's a real late 80s racial insensitivity movie, like in a crazy way where there's one black character, he's literally wearing a dashiki, just like.
Yeah, one of the.
Oh, that's
like,
right. Yeah, I remember
like,
that,
what's
dude.
What's up? There's one black character, he's wearing a dashiki, also the police. Because you cut back to the police a bunch of times because they're investigating. Because the point of the movie is, since more immortal beings are fighting with each other, because there is a... I'll add this. There presents himself, of course, a bad guy.
Yes.
And I don't even remember this bad guy's name because who gives a shit? I would just call him...
Kurgan?
The bad guy?
I believe his name is Kurgan.
The villain in the movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
May I also add... Kurgan? Is in the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah,
he is one of the prison guards.
Absolutely,
who
oh my
like
God.
Hangs
the
Andy Dufresne over the thing. That's who.
Oh
that,
my God,
yeah. He shows up in
that's
the
like
movie,
his first movie,
and I got back on board. I was like, Clancy Brown. I was like, Clancy Brown. I'm in. Here we go. It's back on track.
And he plays the most over the top villain.
Unbelievable.
The most over the top bad guy. A bad guy so over the top. They literally have to show him making oral sex motions to a nun.
Yeah.
classic nun move.
In church while wearing safety pins in his neck.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He's not wearing them as a necklace.
He's super punk rock.
He's put safety pins in his neck. So there's a terrible bad guy in this whole movie. So the whole movie is really about immortal beings beheading each other to sort of become the one immortal being to rule
there
them all.
Can
the
be
lord
only
of the immortal
one.
Beings. Yeah, there can be only one. That is the tagline for the movie. But I would add this. And I did not like the movie, and here's my biggest problem with it. Besides the tagline being repeated over and over again and on posters, that there can only be one, there is zero evidence or reason in this movie that these immortal beings have to kill each other. There is no reason for them to fight. They just travel the world to find each other so they can cut each other's heads off. There is no external driving force.
Absolutely.
There's no God. There's nothing going on except for that one of them is kind of bad. Like the bad guy, what is his name? The Gherkin?
Kurgan.
The Kurgan.
I think.
The tiny pickle. He is like the bad guy, but if there wasn't this bad guy, it feels like what they should do is just take out that one bad seed and then the rest of them can just live forever. Because all the rest of the dudes,
but let me
they
ask
have
you
beers
this.
Together. They chill out.
Yeah.
They're like butt slapping.
Yeah.
They're like, when's the last time I saw you? I believe it was in 1789. Man, we had fun. Like, they are the best friends you've ever seen.
But Cameron, who wants to live forever?
Oh, that is the tagline. Who does want to live forever? But I guess, and we will wrap it up on this, the final part of the movie, which answers the question, who wants to live forever? I guess, so you find out that the reason that they're all killing each other is because one of them will get a prize. The prize is unspecified. I was thinking maybe it was like a cat in a sock or something else that you'd get if you threw like a couple of darts at a balloon.
Like a framed photo of Donnie Wahlberg from The New Kids on the Block.
I thought maybe it would be like a glow-in-the-dark frog. If you press its back, it jumps up.
Exactly.
You know, like, or a small disc, and if you invert it, it pops in the air. You know,
and you can give yourself hickeys.
I thought maybe it was some sort of prize like that. But you find out that the prize is just that, number one, you become mortal.
I'm not into that.
Number two, you just can hear people's thoughts. And number three, your sperm works again. Because the biggest problem for these immortal dudes is that they can't have kids, which really bums out our lead man. He wants to have kids. So at the end, you find out that there's, like, voiceover. It's like, and then his... It turns out at the end, it's like there's like Land Before Time-esque voiceover. Like,
absolutely.
In the time before man, there were dinosaurs and they ran out of food and Littlefoot. Oh, you know, like it's like this whole. But so you find out that he can have children. So he's cut off a bunch of people's heads, and all he gets is to listen to people talk. Basically, he gets the reward of Mel Gibson's character in the movie What Women Want. That is the end reward for immortality, for 400 years of struggle, and he had to watch his wife die in front of him, and he had to cut the head off of a gherkin, all of these things, and the end of it, all he gets is just to listen to, and they go, and now he can understand how politicians think, and he can understands how priests think. That's literally like a line in the movie. So now he just has all this responsibility. He's like, fuck, I gotta die soon but before that, I gotta solve
gotta
all
heal
of the world's problems.
Gotta heal the world.
Terrible. Terrible movie.
I'm just gonna say that I didn't like it because it's a movie set in the 80s and I did not see one establishing shot of any breakdancing. So I am out.
There was no breakdancing.
There was no breakdancing.
There was no breakdancing in that
movie. Rhea Butcher's out.
You're right. Actually, I would say that in general, there was very little cardboard anywhere.
Exactly.
Certainly not on the ground in New York City. But based on the end of this film, I had some alternate title ideas I thought maybe I'd run by you guys.
Ooh, I like this.
One is just, God, I can't wait for that bad guy's head to be cut off. It gets kind of long at the end. I feel like they could have just really gone with that as a title. The other title is How Stella Got His Sperm Back.
I think because I stopped caring so much during this movie, I did not realize that part of the thing was they get to now have children.
Yeah.
So why is it when they cuts somebody's head off, it's almost like this galactic orgasm that they have.
Yeah.
Lightning comes from above. He's putting his hands
it
up.
Is. Like, it's the ultimate circumcision. Hey, I bet it makes it easier to wash. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. A headless man is a well-washed man.
Keep it real clean.
Now is the time in the show when we are going to give you a brief review of a dick flick. I made that up.
I love dick flicks. I love it.
I really want people to say that.
It's going to catch on. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
It's got legs.
I think it does. It has dicks.
And balls.
So this week we chose Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Which, as of this taping, is available on Netflix Watch Instant. Here's why we chose it. Number one, I personally had never seen it. Ricky and Rhea had seen it. I had not seen it. They both recommended it. Number two, we watched it as a form of protest against the film Jack Reacher. Hey, we might want to see the former Mr. Kidman and Holmes punching dudes while wearing leather. But I, for one, will never see a movie called Jack Reacher. I just won't see it. I don't like the title. I'm not going to see it. But I was glad to have a little Tom Cruise in my life. Also, as a heads up to our listeners, spoilers may follow. So I'm going to kick things off talking about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol with the film's IMDb synopsis, which reads as follows. The IMF, that is the Impossible Mission Force. I had to look that up. Not the International Monetary Fund. That is very funny that that's there because it reads... The IMF is shut down when it's implicated in a bombing of the Kremlin. I was like, what did the Kremlin do? I mean, the IMF can fuck people over, but I didn't think they were into bombing. But anyway, that's the Impossible Mission Force. That's Tom Cruise's people. They're shut down after a bombing of the Kremlin, causing Ethan Hunt, that's Mr. Tom, and his new team to go rogue to clear their organization's name. The cast of this movie, it's Tom Cruise, Paula Patton, Simon Pegg, and Jeremy Renner. Like a pre-everything-else Jeremy Renner.
Sure.
Baby's first Jeremy Renner. So we're going to start by going through some best and worsts from the films. Each of us recorded our favorite and least favorite parts of the movie. They might be the same. They could be different. The excitement is killing me. I'm going to actually talk about... So here's my favorite part of this movie. Facial recognition contacts. There is a scene in this movie where a character puts in facial recognition contacts that scan the faces around him in a train terminal.
Yeah.
I could not believe...
It's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's
great. It is such a good idea. It caused me to go, absolutely, to the same degree that I did when I first realized in Battlestar Galactica that the Raiders were sort of animals, like living ships. When I first realized that there were living ships in that movie, Rhea, I don't give a shit that you haven't seen that series.
So many people are going to be mad at you for saying that right now.
Fuck that.
Jesus.
Hey, I said spoilers.
Sure.
But facial recognition contacts, number one, I wear contacts. Number two, I can't recognize anybody. I feel like from a practical perspective, I absolutely would like to see this. Also, I love it when a movie does something with technology that we have available that seems impossible, but also doable. Like, it's right in that line of like, oh shit, nobody's doing that. And also, oh, we could definitely do that.
Right, right, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's
the
why
military
I love that
will have that in 15 years.
They might already have that.
Or they, right. Or they contacted the military, like, we won't tell them it's true.
The military already has Facebook brand facial recognition in its context. So I love that. My least favorite part of this movie is that, honestly, there is a moment when Tom Cruise turns to another character and says, a briefcase was stolen, but it doesn't matter, right? I mean, what could possibly be in there? And the other character says, well, just Russian nuclear codes. I feel like the reveal of Russian nuclear codes being stolen was so Austin Powers. It was so Dr. Evil. I could not believe that that's what this movie was about. That being said, a diehard Yippie-ki-yay, Mother Russia is out right now. So apparently it's not as passe as I thought. The 80s are back, ladies and gentlemen. Cold War era back again.
30-year cycle.
So those are my best and worst. Rhea, we'll go to you next. What's your best and worst from this film?
So there are a lot of great set pieces in this movie, which I love. But I'm going to go with that sandstorm chase. Because there's really not any other movie that I can think of that has like a blind... It is like the Silence of the Lambs... night goggles answer in action. Like, that's what I love about it. It's a blind car chase. They're going like full speed in vehicles. Plus, I love the combo of like old technology just being a car chase and new technology using GPSs to try and find each other.
That's an interesting point because that kind of harkens back to the context. I think one of the things that this movie does really well is combining old and new technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Using an iPad, but then also using like a remote control for a balloon. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of, it's just an updated version of the TV show, which is like super great.
It is. And it's also, I mean, it's just serious enough to be in with the newer James Bond films.
Absolutely.
Like it's a Daniel Craig era James Bond film. Like serious, interesting. And I did find myself like, wondering what was going to happen next, which I feel like almost never happens for me in action movies.
I'm glad you said that about James Bond because as I was watching it, I was like, is Ethan Hunt? Is this Tom Cruise guy? Is this our American James Bond? Is he the guy right now? I mean, there's the Jason Bourne movies.
Yes.
Well, I feel like those two are the guys where it's like, all right, we haven't decided yet which one of them is.
Yeah.
But it's one of them too. I was definitely thinking James Bond as I was watching.
Well, would you say Bourne is more of a Superman and Ethan Hunt is more of a Batman? Because Bourne is all like punching and being able to do insane physical stuff and having like the knowledge of getting himself out of any situation. Whereas this Tom Cruise character is great at using his gadgetry.
Yeah.
Like he's perfectly trained, but he doesn't have nothing.
On the surface.
He constantly makes everything into something that he can use. So it's very interesting to see those two movies as like different sides of the same coin.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
And what we
I also want to say one last thing in my best in that car chase, because it sort of ends with Tom Cruise on the top of it and flipping over and fighting the bad dude from on top of the car, which totally harkens back to Back to the Future Part 2.
And
the, the Biff versus Marty fight for the Grays Sports Almanac near the end of Part 2. And so, everybody, this is your Rhea relates every movie back to Back to the Future 2 moment. I know you guys were waiting for it. That
amazing.
Is it right there.
Oh, that's great.
So you would go for a best part in the movie for you, Sandstorm car chase.
I mean, there's...
You know,
yes,
I would say
it's
this.
It's up there.
Thank God he wasn't wearing those facial recognition contacts.
Itchy.
When he got into that sandstorm.
That's true.
He would have been in a hell of a lot of pain.
He just happened to have those goggles when he was up on that huge skyscraper moments before that. So, I mean, come on. That guy knows what he's doing.
He did have goggles to wear during that moment. And then what would you say was your worst part of this movie?
My worst part of the movie is just the fact that they had to use their single female spy as, like, sexy bait. I think she was awesome and ass-kicking. She had some great fight scenes, and
yeah,
she has,
did.
Like, some emotional torment. She had some depth. I really liked that. But I just didn't like that they had to, like, throw her out there in, like, a skimpy dress. I know she got the last laugh or the last kick, the last punch.
Wait,
but
I
it just bummed me out that she had to be put in that position because it feels like
the only
movies just go
the,
there
the
too
only,
often.
The only time I was like, I don't know if this part is necessary, is when the two girls are fighting. And then she rips off a piece of the other girl's dress.
Sure.
And I was like, all right, every other dude has been fighting in this movie and no clothes are flying
right.
off.
Yeah, their clothes are
now,
flying.
No, right away. Already. Sure. That was the only time. Yeah.
Where did these buckets of water come from? Why are we wearing white T-shirts? Well, I can't remember this. Do dudes punch chicks in this movie? I know chicks punch chicks.
There is
we can
no,
think on that.
Do dudes punch chicks in
yes.
this movie?
Yeah.
There's two chicks in this movie.
Yeah. I can't remember if either
yeah,
of them
Yeah, I honestly
by
can't
a
remember
chick.
If they get punched or not.
I don't.
Well, that's
I don't.
Just a good question to ask because I always find that pretty refreshing when it comes to like spy movies because they always have female characters and they are never interacting with the dudes in the way where the dudes feel comfortable defending themselves. And I guess I feel like if you're really in that position, you'd punch the shit out of that chick. So Rick, what were your Ricky Carmona? What were your best and worst parts of this movie?
My best part of the movie would be, just kind of piggyback on what you were saying, Rhea, all the major action set pieces. I feel like the scenes lead up to this huge release of, now we're going to watch this. The sandstorm is great. Before that, before the sandstorm, him climbing... as I was watching, I was like, man, I really wish I had seen this in the theater.
Oh, I did.
That whole...
And it was
climbing
amazing.
Climbing up an enormous skyscraper on the outside of the skyscraper using, like, sticky gloves.
Yeah, sticky gloves. The set piece before that where it's actually, this isn't a huge set piece, but when he's escaping from the hospital from the Russian cop, because what does happen in the big set action set pieces that I love that Tom Cruise has is he'll get hurt or he'll do something and he'll have that moment of how the fuck did I just do that? I love that. It just gave it this kind of he wasn't like what's happened to John McClane's superhero now where he's just like, I just jumped off a jet. All right,
yep.
Let's go do this
yeah.
next thing. There was that moment of, Jesus Christ, what the fuck just happened right there? How'd I do that?
I think that right there is harkens back to that Bourne comparison. Like this last 10 years in action movie making where they allow the character to be hurt.
Yeah, I
and
like,
then
yeah.
to be including that in the way that they continue to fight. And I think that is very interesting.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
That's huge, I think.
And
huge.
What would you say would be your worst part of this movie?
The worst, you know, I feel like it kind of loses steam in the third act. Towards the end, when they get to, India, I had a real problem when they get to India and the guy from Slumdog Millionaire yeah. shows up. I hate it when movies, when they go to a country and they cast an actor and they cast the one actor from that country.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was actually pretty surprised Cal Penn wasn't in this
yeah,
film.
I would not have been surprised when he showed up. And to me, it all goes back to The X-Files. I remember it was one of the later seasons of The X-Files, and it was the episode about the Chupacabra. I'm Latino. Early on in the 90s, the Chupacabra was a huge thing. The Chupacabra was some animal that was killing goats or something. So The X-Files does an episode on it. Ruben Blades is in it. I mean, just every Latino actor that you could think of right. shows up in this episode. So I was like, all right, I get it.
Taco Bell dog was there.
Exactly. The Latinos from Sesame Street show up. I got it. I understand what you're trying to do here. But yeah, just overall, the third act, I just kind of, I felt like it was just, I was like, all right, let's wrap it up. Or where are we going to another location now after this? It just got a little too... I was ready for it to wrap it up. It was going so fast, it seemed to kind of like just take this little bit of a stutter step.
You know, actually, now that you're saying that, I honestly can't even remember the last third of the movie. So I agree, yeah. I agree with you, guys, that I think that what this movie does really well, and so if you're listening at home and you haven't seen it and you're wondering if you should, this movie is great at showing you interesting moments and setting up things that you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen. He's going to slide through there and into that. And then and then you get to see that. There's a great immediate payoff. I wouldn't say that it's a long-term, life-changing action movie where you can't believe how it all resolved. Because
right.
honestly, I don't even remember how it resolved. But if you want to see cool stunts that are actually happening in a very fulfilling way, that's what this movie is for. It's a popcorn movie, nothing else. And so I guess... the final thing I just want to ask you guys before we wrap up our Mission Impossible review is for like a rating from each of you guys. And so we're going to do on a scale of 1 to 5. Of course, on this particular movie, it'll be 1 to 5 Megs. Those are the type of plane that Tom Cruise shot down in a little film called Top Gun. So on a scale of 1 to 5 Megs, Rhea, what would you give this movie?
On a scale of 1 to 5 Megs, I give it 4 Megs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jester's dead. I had a great time. It was super fun.
I don't think I understand.
It's a reference to Top Gun.
Oh,
don't
shit.
Worry about it.
But wasn't his name Duck or something?
Goose.
Goose.
Co-pilot. But
I haven't seen it in a while.
Man, you got to
rewatch
Top Gun.
Kelly McGillis, okay?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. So I give it 4 Migs, and then I give it 3 Eyes Wide Shut. Because that's my scale for the filmmaking in terms of, like, bad third act, like you said, Rick. And great action.
Oh, hilarious.
Not a perfect movie.
All right, so Ricky, on 1 to 5 Megs, what would you say?
I will give it 3.5 Megs.
Okay.
3.5.
All right, so not quite general material, but you're still shooting them down. I would also give, you know what, actually I think we're in agreement. I think I would give it 3.5 Megs. You said 4 and 3, that averages to 3.5. I think all as a group we've given this a 3.5, so that's not bad. And I would say if you're looking for something to do on like a Sunday afternoon when you have been out late on a Saturday, this is your movie, Netflix Watch Instant, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Oh, yeah.
Pop it on.
Hey, gang. Lindsay again. Thanks so much for listening. Cameron, Rhea, and Ricky will be back next week with a review of Star Trek Into Darkness, which is in theaters now, so go see it.
Man Ben Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Lindsay, and Maximum Fun, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.